through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
How are the Seahawks going to get back to the Super Bowl? We have our blueprint and we have our player profiles every single day. Today is Michael Kendrick's day. How about that?
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run in 2020.
Let's go!
Contract extension profile.
Michael Kendrick's 2012 second-round pick to Philadelphia. He comes to Seattle Seahawks after experiencing a really difficult situation in terms of his legal trouble with insider trading, and the Seahawks got him last year in 2018 after week two in serious, dire needs because of injury situations. And Michael Kendrick's right away made a big impact. At 5'11", 240 pounds, age 29, he'll be turning 30 in September, brings a unique set of skills that Pete Carroll and this organization really like. And here's Pete Carroll talking about those skills.
I really like the way he plays. I like what Mike brings us. He's a very active player. He's an unusually instinctive, athletic guy for the position. That's why we played him so much against three wides. And he runs four fours, you know. And so he's a real fast linebacker. I hope that, you know, we'll get him back and get him back with us. And look forward to that.
Kendrick started 14 games last year and unfortunately ended in a difficult ACL tear against the San Francisco 49ers. He brought great production to the Seattle Seahawks, 71 tackles, 8 TFLs, 3 sacks, and 1 INT. With Michael Kendrick, it's interesting because his skill set is so unique that it actually forced the Seattle Seahawks and Pete Carroll to play 3 linebackers on the field, base personnel, pretty much the entire season, more than any other team in the NFL. And for the reason, it was because of Michael Kendricks. They had to find a way to get him on the field. And as Pete Carroll said, he had elite 4-4 speed to give him that ability to play in space and be a great player out over the slots. It was something that was controversial, but in terms of Michael Kendricks and what he brought to the team, it's something that I think can't go ignored, the fact that he played at a high level in a position that he's not normally played throughout his career. He's traditionally a Mike and Will linebacker. The Seahawks asked him to play Sam linebacker, outside linebacker, and he did a fantastic job, and he made tremendous plays like this one.
Johnson stays in the game on 2nd and 10. Here comes the blitz, and Murray goes down. Michael Kendrick's like a shot inside the 10-yard line. He gets there. Kyler Murray dropped for the second time today, and it's going to bring up 3rd and long for Arizona.
Michael Kendrick's is a guy that I would love to have back here. It makes it muddy, though, because of the situation that he's in. He's coming off an ACL tear. You don't know what his legal situation is currently, but his last contract was a 1-year, $4.5 million contract. That's something that the Seahawks could definitely redo once again with Kendrick's and still get great value for him. To me, he's an instinctual player, tremendous speed and explosion. This guy is a legitimate playmaker that you would love to have back on this roster. And Brady Henderson talking about why he's confident Kendrick's will actually come back to Seattle.
Pete Carroll volunteered that he wanted to have Michael Kendrick's back, which to me, that carries more weight when a coach volunteers that as opposed to when a reporter like me says, hey, do you want so-and-so back?
That right there tells you everything you need to know. They are going to find a way. John Schneider, Pete Carroll, find a way to bring back Michael Kendrick's. I think that it's a no-brainer to sign Michael Kendrick's in this situation. He unfortunately isn't going to contribute for you early on in the season, but midway through the year, I think you're going to have Kendrick's there and ready for you. And to have this explosive playmaker to maybe be in a situation to carry some of that weight at that Will linebacker position, that's something that I'm very interested in. And so for that reason, I think Michael Kendrick's should be a Seahawk next year.
All really great points, Jake. I think the one thing, and this sounds unfair for Michael Kendrick's, and it kind of is, but his legal issues, the questions surrounding his availability, does make negotiating a more team-friendly contract easier for Seattle, I would assume.
Do we know when his sentencing date is?
It's been pushed back a couple times.
The last that I could find was that as of about November 19th, it had been pushed back yet again. But I couldn't find anything more current.
I feel like the general assumption has been that any kind of punishment or time served would not be severe, that he would still be able to continue his football career shortly afterward, or that it would be, you know, probation, a fine, whatever. I've never got the impression from either the team or from reports about this that it's something where it could seriously jeopardize his football future. But not knowing when that's going to happen and not knowing what it's going to be does make it, I think, a bit harder for him, considering his skill level and relatively young age, to get a contract that he'd otherwise be entitled to. So I think that the Seahawks could look at him as an affordable option. And I know that some people hear, you know, oh, they forced him to play base defense, and they think, well, why would I want that? I wanted them to play nickel more. But what he did is he provides you an option. The thought process behind playing that more, I think, was Pete Carroll not having as much confidence in who he had at nickel corner and having more confidence in who he had at linebacker.
Given the choice.
And it was fair, because for a while, Michael Kendricks was leading the team with sacks, and him and Bobby Wagner were leading the team with tackles, which isn't weird for a linebacker. But the linebackers, especially early on in the season, were contributing more than any other position group on defense. And you wonder what this team would have looked like, especially with those screens that kept gashing at them. You wonder what it would have looked like had both Kendricks and Jadeveon Clowney been healthy to help contain the edge a little bit there.
It is interesting in terms of Kendricks in this situation, because you talk about this unknown with his legal status. Well, the Seahawks have been through this with him. And so if there's any team that is the most comfortable with Kendricks and his current situation, it is the Seahawks. And I think that leads to them feeling comfortable about bringing him back in this situation. The other part that I look at is, you mentioned the difference between base defense and nickel defense. I think it's a great point to point out that, does Kendricks mean that they go to base defense? In this situation, I don't think so. I look at it and say, you are in a position now of, they're evaluating this. I would anticipate they go back to their nickel defense. And if that's the case, then Michael Kendricks is actually rotating at will linebacker, or you're starting will linebacker. And I think that that's where he should have been all along last season. I think he's an explosive player, a dynamic player, even though he's heading into age 30. This is a guy that still can get it done and play at the highest level like any youngster that you could go get in the draft.
You think that's where he should have been all along?
I do,
then
yes.
What do they do with
KJ, right? I thought that they should have been rotating Kendricks and KJ at will linebacker and been playing nickel this whole time.
I think what people thought they would be doing. I think people thought it would be more of a rotation there and less of a three linebackers on the field.
But
I remember when Carroll said we'd like to get all three of them out there, there was a little bit of surprise.
Yeah, and I do agree with Stacey that the reason why the base defense was so prominent was because of a lack of confidence. A lack of confidence in the pass rush, a lack of confidence in the DBs that they had going into 2019. I think they're going to change their approach this year. And so for me, that's why I would feel more comfortable. Because ultimately, if Kendricks meant them going back to base defense, I would say I'd rather not have it. I would rather them, you know, let Kendricks walk and then play nickel defense. That's how much I am adamant about them playing nickel over base.
I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but how much would that have changed things last year if they had been able to go in nickel and say they had a Justin Coleman or somebody like that? Would we have been as worried or concerned about the pass rush if they were able to play in nickel more often?
Yes, we still would have been talking about the pass rush.
We would have. I'm not saying that we wouldn't have at all.
You're saying, would it be the number one?
It probably still would be number
consensus.
One. But it wouldn't be so dire.
I don't know. Maybe. But I think you're just looking at it from a situation. I don't know if it was necessarily the base defense versus nickel defense that got this team into so much trouble.
I don't think it was either.
If you have Justin Coleman out there, it certainly would help.
It could have saved them. I don't think it was a choice between base defense and nickel that hurt them. You're not saying that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But if they had that option to go to nickel more often, it just could have compensated a little bit.
Absolutely. If it was
an
option that was...
If they weren't able to generate pass rush,
right.
You have more, especially on passing, obviously on passing plays.
If they weren't so afraid to go into nickel defense and match up at different points, I do agree that they probably could have been a better defense, you know, even without a pass rush that was worth a darn. I think that that would have helped them tremendously, and I think that that's why they have to get back to that in 2020. You have to be comfortable playing the matchup situations.
Tell you what, I wouldn't want to be in Michael Kendricks' situation. Like, if I were worried that I was actually going to do some hard time, even if I knew that there were light at the end of the tunnel, that I had my football career waiting for me, like, that, just imagine the amount
you're
of stress
just
he's under.
Lingering. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know. Just, I mean, having that over you.
Right. And maybe it's to his advantage to have these dates pushed back and back and back, but still, would you want to be in that situation?
No.
I would never want to be in any legal situation.
Obviously, but would you, if you were in legal trouble?
I know.
I mean, I'm certainly empathetic about that situation.
Yeah, would you want it to be done, or would you want it to be...
It's part of my answer. No, in this case, the best thing for them to do is to keep pushing it back.
Yeah.
I've seen this multiple times with different players over the years where they have legal situations, they're able to push back, and eventually it becomes a non-issue because the lawyers have just, you know, outweighted the court system is
and
basically
you have
what's
to make yourself available so often, right?
They like, let the taxpayers dry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we look at the season and it's, you know, it looks like it's September to January, but really he's got to be there for OTAs. He's got to be there for all of this off-season stuff. I mean, you have time off basically most of July. You don't have much going on, but there's still a lot of time training camp that he would miss. So you kind of have to keep pushing it back.
You ever done any hard time, Jake?
I have not, thankfully. No. Yes.
No. I've never
been in that situation.
In high school?
I've never been in detention.
Wow.
No.
Did you ever get grounded?
I was suspended. I was suspended from school once.
You went straight to suspension.
You
were suspended?
I skipped over detention.
Remember the great parking lot escapades?
Yeah, at Skyline High School, they didn't allow sophomores to park in the parking lot. There wasn't enough space.
Yeah.
And I thought sophomores like Jake Heaps.
And I thought that I was, you know, I was smart. I was tricky. And so I copied a parking pass from a senior.
You forged?
Yeah.
Jake!
And it was the worst thing that I had done, and I was suspended for 2 days.
Do you regret it to this day, or are you like, you know what? I'm okay with that crime.
You know,
just like Michael Kendrick, that's white-collar crime.
It's kind of okay with that crime.
It was a little bit of a highbrow.
I was willing to serve the punishment.
He put in some effort.
Now, I never did it again, but yeah, it was. I thought it was a bit much, though, like a suspension for
you
that?
You took a parking kind of area away from a senior.
Oh, my bad.
That is a bit much for a suspension. I mean,
yeah, it's a little dramatic, don't you think?
Suspended for that?
Yes. You can make an example out of Mr. Jake.
How long were you suspended?
Just 2 days.
Internal or external?
External.
So you get the day off? That's pretty good.
Yeah, I was at home.
That's a good gig.
I had my time to think at home of all the wrong that I did.
I'm trying to think about ways I can get suspended with pay.
It's the best gig there is.
Is there a way to do that here? Or they just kick you out the door?
I don't think with pay.
Suspended with pay?
Yeah, regret.
Otherwise, we'd all
you.
Be trying.
It's like an in-between crime.
You guys notice we just keep suspending Tom, Jake, and Stacey. It's weird. I don't know why.
It's called a paid vacation.
Yeah.
Want to run through some NFL headlines?
Let's do it.
Actually, before we get to the NFL, can we address Mel Tucker, who has left his recruits high and dry at Colorado?
Sure.
He took the Michigan State job after Mark D'Antonio stepped down, even though he gave these recruits and their families his word. His word that he wouldn't be leaving Colorado. Now, as a former college player, Jake, would that just break your heart in two?
It would drive me nuts what it does. It's the hypocrisy of it all. It's the hypocrisy of college coaches that sit there and they try and sell you to come to their school, and then the next minute they're gone, going to the next biggest and best thing. I'm not saying Mel Tucker's wrong for doing it. If you've got a great opportunity and you're getting significantly more money, hey, that's great that you get that opportunity. But don't ever, as college coaches, sit there and complain about college transfers and how unfair that is and how this shouldn't happen when you bail on these kids more so than anybody else and you are actually impacting their careers more so than anybody else. That, to me, is a direct cause and effect for guys transferring and leaving. And if you're telling guys that you're going to be there and you're sitting on their couch, which Mel Tucker was, and to boosters, literally as they're negotiating a new deal with Michigan State saying that he is not going to, no, I turned that down and I'm not going to be around. That is deceitful, and that's something that I can't get on board with. I'm not saying Mel Tucker's a bad guy.
Right.
I'm just saying that the way you handle those situations are just flat out wrong. I cannot believe that you just can't be honest. I know it's at the detriment of recruiting, but ultimately your job, I mean, that's another part why I think Chris Peterson ultimately walked. He said, I can't do this. I can't walk this gray line. I can't be a hypocrite. I'm not going to be. And so I think that that's the hard part of college football these days.
Well, and I think that it's like you said, he's not a bad guy, didn't necessarily do anything wrong, and that it's all within a kind of cultural norm of how college coaches can do things and operate. I mean, I still remember Sarkisian leaving before. How many coaches have left before a bowl game, or have left kids feeling high and dry? And it's that same thing of, you know, if you're a transfer, you feel like you have to give up a year of play, or it becomes so difficult, or people question, you know, your commitment to a program. And there's just this weird, like scarlet letter that you have to wear sometimes. And it's so silly, because really what you're doing is just finding another opportunity. And
correct,
there's nothing wrong with that. And that's not even to go into some of the hypocrisy people have about college payment. I think it's why people have, you know, issues with a guy like Dabo Swinney getting so much money and then being so against college players being paid. Even if you don't agree with that, I think it's clear that there are certain rules that coaches do not have to follow, that athletes are kind of punished for violating the same thing.
Stacey, wasn't Mel Tucker the drummer for the Velvet Underground?
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, no, my favorite band. Yeah. I love their song.
I love you, baby.
Velvet Life.
Is Michael Bennett feuding with Brock?
This wouldn't be the first time that these two have gotten into it on Twitter.
I know
Twitter.
That. So Brock tweeted... No, excuse me. Michael Bennett tweeted and then deleted a GIF calling Brock full of BS for saying that Bennett was no longer hungry.
There's a long backstory to this. Jim wrote his column. He wants Michael Bennett back.
Right.
Michael Bennett retweeted it. We discussed it on the air. You want Michael Bennett or not? Danny and Gallant asked Brock that same question yesterday on Blue 42. You want Michael Bennett back? Brock said no. 710sports.com then recaps that. Brock Huard says no to Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett, who is obviously following the station and interacting daily now, replies with the gif of feces and said, Brock, you are full of this gif.
Yikes.
Then he deleted it and just replied, at Brock, you're funny.
My favorite part
with the wrong your.
All of this is, and I used to be part of the website crew, but the role of 710 Sports and all of this is to be like, hey, did you hear this? Bye. And we just drop in. We just drop in articles and then leave
bye,
and
go.
Watch. See you later. Let's see what happens now.
Okay, Brock, you deal with this.
What right does Brock have to say that Bennett's no longer hungry?
Well, what does he have the right to say anything? We say a lot of stuff like that on this show.
We say a lot of stuff, but as you learn over time, there is a way to stay in your lane. Like, you can talk about what you see, but I can't sit here and say that Michael Bennett is no longer hungry. I'm not around him every day.
I think he gave Michael Bennett more credit in the full quote. Like, if you listen to the audio, he is more complimentary of Bennett than just that one isolated quote would sound. If you read the article, it has more of what he said in there.
Brock Who's got time says, to read articles?
You well, guys have to read articles. We should all be reading more.
No, Brock said, I want guys to check one of three boxes, young, fast, or hungry. I don't think Bennett's young. I don't think he's fast. And I assume he's not hungry. He's already gotten paid. So
that's
he wants it
fair.
Just like
that's
in
a
box.
That's a limited criteria.
Well, that's so you're with Michael Bennett. You
I
should
am
tweet
with Michael
Brock
Bennett.
That same gif.
No, I'm going to tweet at Michael Bennett.
You need to tweet at Michael Bennett and just say, hey, man, I get it.
Like, dude, hey, man, I'm on your side.
Yeah.
So then Brock replied with a poll, tagged Bennett in the poll. You want at Moses
bold.
Bread back in Seattle or not? What do you guys think the results were?
I'm going to say yes.
I'm going to say 20% yes.
It backfired on Brock.
I think it's 80% yes.
It backfired on Brock, I'm assuming, and probably 65% said yes.
Is it 80?
60.1% no.
Oh!
39.9% yes.
Brock showed him.
He can be on my D-line any old day of the week.
I mean, he'd be a starter on this D-line right now. Didn't we say that the other day?
We're yes.
Like, well, would he start? Yeah, actually,
yeah.
Now that I think about it,
sacks, yes.
As it currently states, he would be the starter right now. And that part of it for me, Michael Bennett, I'm not questioning whether he's hungry or not to play. It's about the role that you're asking him to play. Is he your first or second down pass rusher? No. He's going to be a really good third option for you on your pass rush. He's going to diversify your defensive line if that's what you want to go into. If you're going to bring in a 34-year-old pass rushing specialist, you're doing it for that reason. You're not doing it to bring him in to be one of the saviors of your pass rush in terms of a one or two option. It's a Band-Aid in a situation and not a long-term solution.
That is their offseason project, is to find as many long-term solutions as they can.
Well, they've spent so much time looking at, not that depth pieces can't be long-term depth pieces,
Kendrick's
but it feels
turned
like,
into that.
Yeah, but it feels like they spent a long time kind of, hey, we let high-paid players go, and we're stocking up on young guys, and here's the guys from that group that have become stars, but maybe now we need guys that are immediate starters and not necessarily developmental guys.
I'm just mad at Brock because he hasn't been in here lately to talk to me.
Oh, you feel like maybe he's ignoring you?
Yeah, who does he think he is? He's not even on the air anymore.
So the best way to show him would be to take sides with Michael Bennett and start taking shots at Brock.
Yeah.
That'll get his attention, Tom.
I love Brock too much.
Tom, that'll get his attention, though.
I love everybody.
Brock Huard ain't hungry.
I think you
Brock
should maybe try subtweeting.
Yeah. Subtweeting
both of them? Subtweeting. Yeah, why not?
I can play both sides of the fence.
Yes!
The NFL's officially reinstated Myles Garrett.
Okay.
Interesting.
But on the condition, though, that he never lose his temper like that again.
I feel really, really...
on that condition.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's
all
not
right.
allowed
Interesting.
To rip anybody's helmet
I'm gonna
off.
I'm going
to
be alone here, but I like Myles Garrett. It was unacceptable behavior, but I am openly biased about how okay I am with his reinstatement versus maybe another player.
I didn't think he should be banned from the league for life or anything.
No.
Did anybody think that?
Yeah, some people did.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of there was actually quite a few people that thought that. But I think he should have gotten at least 4 games to maybe even 6 more games during the season for what he did. Mm. Now them reinstating him, am I up in arms about it? Not really, but I just think it's interesting that, you know, you're sitting there saying, okay, you can do this. This is really kind of an unprecedented thing that has happened in a game. We're not talking about practice, we're talking about the game on live television. This is something that I just don't think is behavior that you want to just kind of take at it lightly. And I don't think I'm not saying the NFL has, but I'm thinking there's a bigger statement to be made in this situation.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Jake's going to be like, you know, I'm really thinking like, you know, maybe they should part ways with him, and you know, maybe he comes to Seattle. I don't know. But just
really, what? Yeah, exactly. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to create such a
That's
rift
exactly
that the Browns say,
is.
"Forget it, we don't want this
and
guy."
And Jake's going to be like, "You know what's so great is Pete gives guys second chances."
How did you catch on to that?
This is the plan. I see what's going on here.
Man. Right now, what's on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
Is this really the only game on tonight, number 3, Kansas?
Yes, and I'm watching strictly to root for West Virginia.
Rock chalk, baby. Let's go.
Number 3, Kansas at number 14, West Virginia. Why are you rooting for them?
Just because I went there.
I know you went to 100 schools, but that wasn't one of them.
Kansas was one of my destinations.
He's saying because I
went
to Kansas,
I went to three, Tom. See, the scarlet letter that you're trying to put on me for transferring, here it comes.
And here I am.
Here
now
it comes.
I can be a fan of all these teams. What you guys don't see is how often Jake, Curtis, and Howdy and Kyle tease me and make fun of me behind the scenes. So this is me. Any chance and opportunity I get to troll,
oh,
I take
poor
it.
Stacey. No,
I'm the victim here. I never make fun of anyone. I come in here just ready to do a good job. Never once have I said anything bad about someone or teased anyone or bullied anyone.
Stacey,
I'm just
doing
my job.
I cannot let this continue. The lies that you are telling to the public are just, it's not true.
It's absolutely true.
Don't deceive our listeners.
I'm an innocent person in all of this that just happens to be a lifelong West Virginia fan.
Stacey.
Yes.
That's enough.
Okay.
Rock chalk.
We've got a Seahawk on an ESPN list here that I can't believe actually is generating any publicity whatsoever. We'll talk about him next. 7:10 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Hey, got a little bit of Mariner news here for you.
Yeah, huh?
Franklin Gutierrez is going to be helping coach outfielders at Mariners camp this spring, as well as at times during the season, much like Mike Cameron did last year. You know, we have to play because of that.
Oh, geez.
Top 25 all-time Mariner moment.
The 1-1 on the way, swing and a fly ball into right field and deep. Martinez going back. Goodbye, baseball. Grandma, get out the rye bread and mustard. It is grand salami time. Holy smokes. Franklin Gutierrez with a pinch hit. Grand slam here in the top of the eighth inning.
What a moment it was. Franklin Gutierrez coming back from an unknown injury that kept him out for the better part of 2 years.
I'm weeping.
What a great story this was. He makes a return to baseball.
Man.
And then in the eighth inning of a meaningless game back in 2015, he deposits a grand slam into the right field bleachers of Comerica Park. How can that not be a top five or top 25 Mariner moment of all time?
76-86, the Mariners finished that year. And it would have been 75-87 without that grand slam.
If not for that one.
That's right. Now, that was probably a big moment for Franklin Gutierrez.
Huge.
But I think having him around, it's interesting when you hear guys like that because, you know, they didn't have tremendous careers, but it's interesting that you would, you know, bring a guy out there like that. Mike Cameron made a lot of sense from a standpoint of, you know, very recognizable name,
dude,
was successful player. But I think it's awesome that he's getting into coaching, and maybe he's a fantastic coach.
Do you remember what they used to call Franklin Gutierrez in center field?
Death to flying things.
Death to flying thing. Wasn't that was a Niehaus thing, wasn't it?
Yes.
Death to flying things. Yeah, so he knows a thing or two about it.
Good. Beauty. And I hope it works out for him. I hope Jared Kelenic is all ears to Franklin Gutierrez on defense and center field.
Can you pass this over to Stacey? We need to talk about a guy who needs a change of scenery.
Sure thing.
Away from Seattle. This is according to Brady Henderson.
You want me to read what
I don't know if you need to read the whole thing.
Just
maybe.
I just saw the
name.
This is going to be rough.
So ESPN had their 32 players who need a change of scenery in 2020. ESPN's Brady Henderson suggested that the Seahawk that needs a change of scenery is safety Tedrick Thompson. Here's what Brady said. Although he has been better than his harshest critics suggest, and mentions he was playing through a shoulder injury that required surgery, before that he had key interceptions and consecutive October wins. Thompson has had his share of coverage errors over the past two seasons. He no longer projects as a starter with Quandre Diggs on board and Marquise Blair in the mix. The Seahawks could keep Thompson as experienced depth for the final year of his rookie contract, though he's receiving a raise to a non-guaranteed $2.1 million. That's it. I ended it on a...
What else?
Well, he was going to say via the NFL's proven performance escalator, but then I was like, I don't need to say that.
If he went elsewhere and he did actually get a change of scenery, an opportunity to play, and he played well, would that upset anybody here?
I think that the Seahawks... I look at everything in the Alex Collins comparison, which is...
I do, too. I was just going to say the same thing.
Because the thing is, Alex Collins didn't have a ton of time. With Tedrick Thompson, he will have played out the bulk of his rookie contract. So it's like CJ Procise. You can't fault the team. Even though someone was talented in college and they have promise and they would theoretically maybe be cheap, you can't fault the team if they give them 3 years or 4 years, depending on how far through the contract they go or whether they cut someone.
And he started and then a lot of these games.
Right. If he succeeds somewhere else, then it's like, well, it's not like you had him on your roster for a year or through training camp and cut him, and then that's on you, and you've got, what do they say? Pie on your face?
Yeah.
Egg on your face.
Egg on your face. And you've got egg
pie
on your
face. Pie
on the
face is something different. That's like a joke.
Well, I'm thinking, I watch a lot of British reality TV shows, and pied off is where you look like you got made fun of.
What?
Don't worry about it. Anyways, it's hard to fault the organization for that. So, good question. Could the Seahawks look bad or would it hurt to see him succeed somewhere else?
I don't think they would. And
no.
I'm right with you on the Alex Collins thing. When you're, especially with, I mean, even more so with Tedrick, because he was given more of a chance to start all these games, and he made a couple of picks here and there, but really didn't play up to the level that they needed him to, especially in this defense. So if he were to go somewhere else and fit in and actually be a productive player, I think he's lucky to have that opportunity, and B, good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other side is you've upgraded at the position.
Yeah.
You've got Quandre Diggs, you've got Marquise Blair and Bradley McDougal. I will not be envious of Tedrick Thompson having success somewhere else. Now, if he turns into an all-pro, it'll kind of be like, all right, well, what happened there? But it's also sometimes it's a scheme deal. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's probably not going to happen for Tedrick Thompson. I don't think that, you know, we as a fan base or individuals were, you know, as overly harsh on Tedrick Thompson than what, you know, Brady Henderson said. He played better than what people were saying about him. Look, he came up with two, you know, big interceptions, and the interception he had versus the Rams was, I mean, I'll give him a tip of the cap on that one. That was an incredibly difficult play that he made, a fingertip type of interception.
Was that the one that bounced a few times in front of, or like on his hands, and then he hauled it in?
It was,
like he was already on the ground.
It was one that looked like it had hit the ground, but really he'd gotten his fingertips just barely underneath the ball.
Right.
And the so both of those, though, were tipped interceptions that, you know, were basically right there for him. He wasn't going out of his way to make an unbelievable, spectacular play, you know, that hardly anybody could make. And so there were a lot of unfortunate errors that he made along in his career. And right now, though, I don't know if Tedrick Thompson and the Seahawks are going to part ways with him, because it is, you referenced C.J. ProSize. Mm-hmm. At this point in time, the cost is what it is, and it's not very expensive. So you could have Tedrick Thompson around as a depth piece for you, you know, as your fourth safety. And that's not, he's not a bad depth piece as your fourth safety. As your starter, I wouldn't want that. But as a fourth safety, that's okay.
Yeah, I think sometimes you need to look at the depth of a team. And I think CJ ProSize is the perfect example. I can't tell you how many times I posted something and fans who were so frustrated with his lack of availability would say, just get rid of him. And it's like, I see what you're saying, but hypothetically, he is better than a street free agent, and he's not costing a lot. He's still on a rookie deal. So you, it's
would he be a street free agent, though, if he weren't on this roster?
No, I think another team would take a flyer on him, because, yeah, again, he's going to, I think that he would be a pretty affordable option given his injury history. It's going to be hard for him to push for what a guy like Chris Carson could get.
This is the type of question I would normally ask in three questions, but how good does a depth piece have to be? You mentioned there a street guy. He probably has to be better than a street guy, but what does that actually look like? Is it somebody who's better than
Tedrick
Thompson?
A street free agent? Well, and this is a not a positional comparison, but Jason Myers was a street free agent when he signed with Seattle the first time to compete with Sebastian Janikowski. So sometimes there are guys that end up going somewhere else and working, but usually it's a guy who...
You want a guy to come in as a depth piece.
He's not someone's signing to a practice squad. So he's one of those 40 to 53, when people talk about the XFL players, and they're like, these are the 40 to 53 where they could be on a practice squad, but the talent level isn't substantially more. I mean, again, I think that sometimes a depth piece, he's not going to be the starter, and not every guy on your team is going to be a starting caliber player.
Who were the depth pieces on 2013?
I would say, well, a depth piece to me right off the bat would be Deshaun Shedd
in 2013.
He was a backup safety that year, and then eventually became a starter and became more of a contributor, but he did contribute on special teams in a significant way.
Because Walter Thurman got healthy, and eventually, like when they were playing in nickel.
Right.
But it was Browner, Earl, Richard, and who was the
and
other?
Cam
was the other safety.
And so,
but I don't remember too many guys behind them coming in seamlessly.
They didn't play very often,
right.
But Shedd did was one of those guys. He ended up playing in the Super Bowl. That's just a guy that comes, you know, immediately to mind. But he was a guy that, you know, again, was a transitional player, safety, corner, special teams guy. Wasn't a starting caliber guy at that moment in time, and eventually worked his way up. But Tedrick Thompson, to me, like Stacey said, at that point you hit that 45 to 52 in that roster, and I think that's kind of where Tedrick Thompson is. And you can find guys like that, but Tedrick's been in the system for a little bit, so if you feel comfortable with it, it's not gonna kill you to keep him on, you know, in terms of cap space or anything like that. So it really wouldn't have a major effect on your roster.
Before we get to sum it up, I want to exit here, just circling back to the great Franklin Gutierrez and also the great Dave Niehaus.
There's the pitch on the way, and a swing and a drive into right center field, and flying over there on the run, reaching out to one hand the ball. That man get the flying things.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back.
I know you guys are really young, but do you remember?
I'm incredibly young.
Yeah, you are. Let me see your diploma. You guys remember Deflategate?
Yeah, Tom. Let me tell you about Deflategate.
Back in my day.
The year was 2014.
I believe it was the Baltimore Ravens that initially suspected the Patriots of deflating footballs, and they told the Colts about it. The Colts were then, or in turn, blown out in the AFC Championship. Right, they ended up being the whistleblowers. But now, Stacey, you're telling me that we may have a similar situation in baseball where one team alerted another about the Astros sign stealing?
Yeah, so we had heard before, this might have been from Ken Rosenthal, we had heard before that the Nationals changed their signs during, or did something with their signs during the World Series win over the Houston Astros.
This is how they beat them. This is how they overcame them.
But there was an article that came out today in the Washington Post that says specifically that the Dodgers reached out to the Nationals and were like, hey, these guys are stealing signs. This is what we think they're doing. Like, just so you know, this is really serious. And then the Nationals did this pretty, like, elaborate thing. I read it for the first time during the break, but
essentially they had their own coding.
Yes, they had their own coding. They met the Friday before. This is the Nationals. The pitchers met on the Friday before the World Series started, and then they went through this whole system that they were kind of creating to, quote, the idea was to cleanse the pitchers' minds of any idea that Houston had an unfair advantage. So after meeting with the Dodgers and talking with the Dodgers, they designed a plan to keep Houston from stealing signs.
You know what's interesting about that World Series, too, is that that was the first World Series where every team won every game on the road.
I know.
So when...
I like that World Series.
Did it... Let's see. That series opened in Houston, right? And the Nationals won the first two. Then they went to Washington for three. The Astros won those three. Then they came back to Houston, and the Nationals ended up winning there. That's when you factor that in, that's very strange. I mean, it's strange, but it makes some sense.
Right, when you factor in that they weren't...
That they were protecting against it, that they were able to win four games in Houston.
Right.
That actually does make some sense.
I know. And that kind of idea of, well, the Nationals changed their signs and then they were able to win there has come up. But the added layers of them very intentionally doing that with the knowledge that the Astros were stealing signs... like it wasn't just, oh, we're worried about it. It was that another team came to them and said, this is happening.
Are you guys surprised about that? I mean, when I heard that the Ravens had alerted the Colts to it, I was kind of like, what is this, some AFC pride thing? Or like, do we just hate the Patriots that much? or what's going on there? I mean, amongst professional teams, is it
it's not weird when you have a relationship. When coaches have relationships with each other, then yeah, if I'm friends with another coach that's playing in the playoffs and I see something like that, then yeah, I'm going to notify them. And here's the other funny thing. This is professional sports, so it's a lot different, but there are like high school coaches. So like high school coaches in the area, they will help each other out if their team gets eliminated from the playoffs and another team from their division is continuing the playoffs. They'll actually help each other out. Like coaches, they have relationships with each other, and it's like, hey, I do have pride in my division that I'm from, you know? And
that
so
makes sense at lower levels.
At lower levels. But in this aspect, it is funny. And you talk about Deflategate. I mean, how much of an advantage was that really when we really come down and think about it? I mean, to me, that was the most overblown, ridiculous thing ever.
Get it, but sign stealing. Ah!
Now, yes, he caught on. And for the, you know, the situation here, to me, this is something that I'm frustrated with, because if the Dodgers knew that this was going on and they were advising the Nationals about this, why is it just now coming out?
Because it also means that lots of other people knew.
Yeah, lots of other people knew. So, you know, I mean, the old common phrase of snitches get stitches. Like, I guess you lose street cred in amongst your peers if you're the snitch. But ultimately, like, it's cheating at the highest level possible, in-game cheating. Why would you not say something about that and try and put the Astros down while they're you know, cheating every which way possible?
Kyle, weren't we talking, this was in an interview, actually, it wasn't with us, I think it was with Bob David Moore, when Marco Gonzalez said that he thought that they were cheating too. So it sounds like this was I don't know how commonly held a belief, but somewhat a shared belief among people on different teams that this is something that was happening.
Yeah, sometimes I guess it takes more than one voice before people start believing it. And it depends on who the voice is. Mm-hmm. Like when Mike Fiers tells The Athletic one random day, oh, yeah, my team was doing all this weird stuff. It's like, wait, what did you just say?
Yeah.
Like we don't always catch it immediately and realize the severity of something because we need time to get our heads around it. I remember my reaction to that story when it first broke. I think I was still on the air with you guys. I don't remember. My reaction was like, well, how much of an effect can this possibly have on baseball? This is like no big deal. Like, you know, the Astros are still striking out. So how big of an effect could this possibly have? And then like within maybe a day or two, I was like, whoa, this is really bad.
Yes.
You know?
I mean, it went from one little thing to all of a sudden blowing up.
Yeah.
Once again, you say, what is it going to take? What did it ultimately take for this whole firestorm to end up coming forward? I mean, that's something.
It takes a groundswell of attention sometimes.
It,
from the right people.
Well, yeah, you wonder, like, what was the domino that finally fell? And where was that? And I can't wait for this story to age to where it gets to a point where people are out of baseball and willing to give interviews and willing to talk about it. Because I would be fascinated to know how many people, especially how far it permeated baseball in front offices, how many people had talked to the league and said, hey, this is a problem. How many players knew about this? Was this something everyone knew about and we were just late to catch on?
I think the day that AJ Hinch got fired, that was a big one.
Yeah.
And then Beltran and Alex Cora being under suspicion.
The 30 for 30 is going to be wild.
Who's our guy tomorrow?
Our guy tomorrow is Al Woods.
Al Woods.
We're going to be looking at big old Al Woods.
Spotlighting Al Woods. How bad do we need Al Woods? Do we need to hold on to him? We're doing that tomorrow, 7:10, ESPN Seattle.
Snitches get stitches.